Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. Hour number two, Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk. I was just looking at an alert about Michigan. Cases are spiking in Michigan, placing the state among the worst in the nation. I think we know that. But the advice now is Rochelle Walensky says Michigan needs to shut things down rather than try to lean more heavily on vaccines. I don't know if I completely understand what's going on in Michigan right now. In fact, I don't. But if they can't get more people vaccinated, they're going to have to lock it down for how long? For 2 or for 3 weeks? In the meantime, a lot of these states are doing significantly well. We should be hearing any day now about this unbelievable super spreader event in Texas because of the full capacity opening day crowd. So I'm holding my breath on that. We spent a fair amount of time at the beginning of the show talking about Minneapolis. It's just devastating once again. Sloane Martin is back with us. She's a reporter at WCCO, one of our sister stations in Minneapolis. And here we go again, Sloane. And you guys are in the middle of this trial, and then all this happens over the weekend.
That's right. I mean, we knew that there was going to be, or I should say officials were expecting there to be a really similar kind of unrest, particularly if there is, a not guilty verdict, for example, on any of the three charges that Derek Chauvin is facing, and that we heard from police officials from the state, federal and local level today who said that they actually advanced their public safety plan from basically phase three out of four, which was originally going to be implemented once there was closing statements. But now we have this happening simultaneously, and it's been very strange to experience today, to feel like this trial that is being so closely watched throughout the entire country has now, kind of stepped aside in a way in the news cycle with this other police shooting that happened just yesterday.
So explain where Brooklyn Center is in relation to Minneapolis and what happened here with this guy, Dante Wright.
Well, it's in the surrounding ring of suburbs. It's northwest of Minneapolis. I think it's technically only about 10 miles from where Floyd died at 38th in Chicago in South Minneapolis. So it's not far away. It's a suburb that is actually a majority minority. I believe it's 55% non-white in that city. And their mayor is African-American as well. So it's just a surrounding suburb quite close by. But because of what happened last night with the looting, with the protesting, there is a curfew in place from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. in three counties in the Twin Cities metro area, including Hennepin.
Well, yeah, the Blues were supposed to play tonight. They're not going to play the Wild. The baseball game has been canceled, although I heard that your weather is not that great, and that might have been an issue anyway. So the explanation that's given right now, we played a little of the audio. You know, here's the body cam. The officer is saying, I'm going to tase you. And then she repeats, taser, taser, taser. And then she fires a shot and she says, oh, I shot him. And she was surprised by that. Here's the police chief, Tim Gannon, explaining.
As you can hear, the officer, while struggling with Mr. Wright, shouts, taser, taser, several times. That is part of the officer's training prior to deploying a taser, which is a less lethal device. That is done to make her partners aware, as well as the subject, that a taser deployment will be imminent. During this encounter, however, the officer drew their handgun instead of their taser.
Well, do we know, Sloane, anything more about that decision and whether or not that's even going to matter at this point?
We don't know anything else besides what police officials were able to tell us, including that body camera video, which you just played, which is very important in contextualizing what we heard from the police chief of Brooklyn Center, because as you could hear, she says, taser, taser. She seems surprised that she shot him. And what we learned also is that from the police training, The firearm for police is on one side of their body, and the taser is on the other.
Right.
So in this case, you know, him mentioning that it was an accidental discharge in this case. But I'm sure we have not heard any update. We know that the Hennepin County prosecutor here, the county attorney, we call them, has referred this case over to a surrounding county, which is another agreement which happened out of the unrest from George Floyd's death, that they're going to have a county attorney in another county be able to review a case, again, to avoid a possible conflict of interest,
sure.
I should say, because obviously county prosecutors have to have a close relationship with their local police departments.
Sloan Martin, excuse me, with WCCO in Minneapolis. So how bad was it last night, and how much are they bracing? And I'm guessing this went beyond Brooklyn Center. This was in Minneapolis and some of the areas that had been hit before or not.
That's right. There was a couple of incidents on along Lake Street and in South Minneapolis, and there was unfortunately a fatal shooting in South Minneapolis as well. Not connected, but just to illustrate the kind of chaotic night that it was. And certainly people are bracing not just for possible violence, like the looting. Of course, it's very difficult to see, you know, business owners be really hurt by these actions. But also people are really, what's the best word for it? I guess they really are thrown off, really triggered by a presence of a really large police force, that people came out, were asking questions about this death. We heard from Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, who said, you know, this basically saying that this is a profession where you can't have a careless and tragic mistake. So people come out and are met with a really large police force, which they say, and I've talked to a lot of protesters and I've marched alongside them many times as part of my job over the last year, that is something that they don't want to be confronted with, that they're mourning, they have questions, and that's a really kind of a hostile presence to them. So we heard from Governor Tim Walz today, who said that the largest police presence in Minnesota is going to be assembled tonight. That's going to include National Guards as well. And they said hundreds and hundreds of officers throughout the Twin Cities.
Well, we've seen that, you know, we saw that at work here and at play during the aftermath of Mike Brown and Ferguson. And sometimes that does not, you know, you have to, it's a tough call because you want the police presence, the National Guard, to prevent more businesses from being destroyed. But my guess is that the protesters are going to ramp it up even further because they're not going to like that show of force.
That's right. And it really is, you know, part of that debate about escalation and kind of measuring that response and the proportionality. I know people were very concerned yesterday about the use of tear gas and non-lethal munitions. I know at least one journalist was struck by one. People were concerned because nearby apartments, this was happening in a firmly residential area. So there were children nearby, or I should say apartments with children nearby. Mm-hmm. People were coming out onto their balcony saying, "My children are in here." I can tell you from personal experience, I'm sure lots of people, as you've mentioned, can in St. Louis as well. Tear gas is really, really unpleasant. So that was obviously a concern. And people really did not like seeing that and experiencing it from police when they felt like they were just gathering in mourning.
Well, we'll see what happens. In the meantime, no time to talk about George Floyd, but is that still on track for just a couple of more weeks left? Or what would be your thoughts there?
Well, the state could be resting as soon as today. We know that we are getting very close to the state resting. And we heard from Judge Peter Cahill that closing arguments could happen as soon as a week from today, which means the jury could start deliberating next Monday. So they are going to be sequestered for the time that they are deliberating, not just yet. The defense did try to they requested a motion to have the jury questioned about their knowledge of what happened in Brooklyn Center, and also a request to have them sequestered. But Judge Peter Cahill said that to this trial and a verdict and also a police fatal shooting are dissimilar and not the same kind of situation. So they are not going to be sequestered at this time.
OK, well, a lot going on up there. And Godspeed is what I would say, Sloan.
Thanks very much.
All right. Take care. I want to take some phone calls because I haven't done that yet, you know, settling into this new show. But I'm always curious about what law enforcement would say in reaction to this. 314-241-9797. This one's a little tricky only from this perspective. Clearly, we know at least if you believe the officer and Chief Gang, she didn't mean to shoot the guy with the gun. She meant to have, she thought she had her taser on, unless she was just making that up and thinking that people wouldn't realize it. But I don't know why you'd do that. It sounds like right. The emotion of the moment, her training was forgotten. She pulled out the service revolver and she shot, you know, Mr. Wright. On the other hand, the one thing, and I was going to kind of tie this in, and I started the show talking about the case of
Windsor.
Karan Nazario out in, this one's in Virginia, where you have the guy, and he's a military guy, gets pulled over for apparently having, in a similar situation, this guy didn't have tags. This guy in Virginia didn't have tags, although he did. It was just tinted windows. If you looked at the vehicle, the SUV from the back, you might think that he didn't. So he's pulled over. The officers start making some threats, things along those lines. They tell him that, you know, let's see if I can find the cut on this, because
I think it's 8.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm not used to having the number. This is what that audio sounded like. So you'll hear the officers screaming at this guy. But I guess I bring it up from this perspective, too. There was a lack of cooperation in both circumstances, where the officers were ordering people to do something. Again, not justifying anyone being shot in the Nazario situation. No one was killed or shot. Mm-hmm. But there's a lawsuit right now. But it's saying, you know, if you look at the patterns here, people, if they cooperate, typically they don't get shot.
Now. This is not how you treat a vet. I'm actively serving this country, and this is how you're going to treat me?
Back up, Daniel.
I didn't do anything.
Back up.
Whoa, hold on. Daniel. What's going on? Hold on.
Now, he's in his vehicle. And I think at that point, that's when they're pepper spraying.
Yeah, that's the
Get
sound
out of the car.
Of the
right.
Get out of the car now. Get out of the car now.
You know what I'm saying? That's effed up, and he's got the tear gas. Now, I probably played that reverse because at first.
Get out of the car now.
He says, I've served this country, and this is how I'm treated.
Obey. Get out of the car. Get out of the car now.
Now, he doesn't know what's going on. He's like, what's going on? And his argument is, look, I was afraid because I didn't know what was going on.
So get out of the car now! Get out of the car now!
All right, so when I watched that on Friday night, and if anyone wants to chime in on this, 314-241-9797, 241-9797, my first instinct was, look, this guy was told repeatedly what to do, and he did not obey the commands. On the other hand, I think that reading deeper into the circumstances, and he's probably going to get a jury settlement here that's rather significant based on the actions of the cops, but I can make the argument that says, look, if that guy just would have cooperated, none of this would have happened. He's going to make the argument that if I had cooperated, I might be dead. So what are people going to believe? In this situation in Minneapolis now, it's not black or white. There is nuance to that story as well. I'm not saying you let the cop off the hook for killing someone, but what's the proper recourse here?
Well, it's interesting, the Windsor one, the Virginia one in particular, because that second clip that you heard is very shortly after about 20 seconds or less after the traffic stop began. So you can hear he's already very high. At one point, I don't know if anybody heard it in there, but he says, the guy in the car says, what's going on? And he says, what's going on is you're fixing to ride the lightning.
Right. Now, then that's an important part of that, because
and
that's where I would draw the distinction. Ride the lightning means you're going to get tased, yeah. Right?
Well, it's a awfully intense and not necessarily de-escalating way to handle things, in my opinion. He also, at one point, he says, I'm afraid to get out of this car.
And the guy cop says, you should be,
you
right?
should be afraid yeah. to get out of this car, which is not great when you're trying to get somebody to get out of the car. Then he, you know, reaches in, he pepper sprays him like 4 times. And this is somebody actively serving. This is a lieutenant in the Army. This is somebody who's serving this country. I agree with him when he says that this is not the way you should treat a veteran. And I think that I have a lot less sympathy to be on the police officer's side in this situation when they are so clearly doing so little to de-escalate a situation, right? Using very inflammatory, telling him he should be afraid to get out of the car, telling him he's going to ride the lightning. That's bad if you're a cop. That's not how you should talk to people, in my opinion.
I would say that it probably is bad. And maybe unprofessional. On the other hand, the perspective that's lost quite a bit in all these situations, and I'm not offering it as an excuse. I suppose I would use, and these cases all kind of mix together, but remember the case of the woman. There was a female officer in Oklahoma. It was a wide open road, and the guy was hopped up, I think, on PCP, and he kept going toward his door, and she was repeatedly telling him, no, 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 and then she shot him because he just wouldn't listen. So there always is a situation where people are not responding to the commands. I agree with you, Andrew, though. If the cops are saying things like that, that doesn't seem that it's the right thing to do. And by the way, the other thing is don't you know that all this stuff is being recorded? But here's the point that I'd like to make. In both of these situations, the cops are scared to death, too. I think we forget about that.
Yes.
Now, they're professionals. They're being trained. But they're worried that they're going to be shot. Why would they be worried about that? Because we have cops that are shot by bad guys all the time during traffic stops. And we've seen it here in Baldwin and elsewhere around the St. Louis area. So that's not to justify somebody being killed who should have been tased in any way, shape, or form. But it is to say, and I said this, I think, earlier off the air, I had a friend who was an officer that was in sex crimes in the St. Louis Police Department. The horrifying things that these officers have to see on a regular basis, especially in something like that, I don't think any of us would ever want to go through something like
that. But that's why it escalates, right? That's why you're saying that the police, they're concerned, too, that somebody's going to shoot them or there's a gun in the car that they haven't seen, which is why they want them out of the vehicle. It's just bad all the way around.
But if I'm pulled over, same thing happens. I have tinted windows. When I got the new SUV for my wife, we had, they're a little bit tinted. And if you look at the back window where the sticker was, it's hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
But if I get pulled over and that happens, does that reaction occur because I'm a white dude? Well, in this situation, the guy was military. I don't know why the officers, knowing all the circumstances, would have wanted to react that way unless they were worried that they were going to get shot. And they don't know what the situation is, and they've had high-risk situations in that area occur. So none of this is black or white. I think there's always differences, but I don't know how Minneapolis gets out of this right now, especially with that case and what's possibly happening with George Floyd. If you want to jump in on this, we'll take a break. Come back with a little more. 314-241-9797. Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now let's take some phone calls just to see what's on people's minds here on the Minneapolis situation. We'll dabble into uncharted territory here on 97.1. It's 521. The phone lines open 314-241-9797. And Gary, get us started. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. I don't know. Got my dandruff up a little bit with the discussions over the pepper spray thing here. I'm a retired cop. I got out of it in just after 2000, and I was actually a pepper spray instructor and certified along with firearms. One of the things we keep running into is the state laws have a lot to do with how things are looked at. Pepper spray, unless they've changed the certification, which I'm not familiar with at all, is about the same level of force as, you know, slapping or punching. It's what you go to in the force continuum right above, you know, hands-on, where you're trying to, you know, put people's hands behind them and cuff them, you know, take them into custody, and, you know, there's some kind of mild resistance, which you overcome with just a little more physical effort on the officer's part. The taser thing, when all the training that I received with it and what I understand from people I know that are still in the service, is pretty close to and supposedly required, at least when they first put it into use, you had to be in a situation where there was justification for using a firearm before you could use a taser. Basically, it was, you know, it was, you were at that point of resistance or threat to you before you deployed it. And
well, in this situation, I would argue that you probably had that level of resistance with the taser.
Okay. Right?
Well, do you disagree with that or not? Yeah. I mean, having seen, I don't know if you've seen the video or heard the specifics.
I haven't seen the video. I understand. Well, it's simple enough. If the guy right. had a warrant for arrest, then they had every right to take him into custody and detain him, and his resistance is what ultimately led to his death.
Right. That is an important point, because they have the handcuffs on him, and then he starts to resist, or they're putting the handcuffs on him. He starts to resist, go back into the car. In fact, after she shoots him, he drives off in the car.
Yeah, and that was the same situation we had up there in Wisconsin, you know, 7-8 months ago, which, you know, the guy with the van that ended up getting shot 8 times in the back and paralyzed. Once you're attempting to arrest somebody, you can't let them run down the street in an automobile, because there's a probably 95% chance or better that they're not going to drive down the street to the speed limit and obey traffic lights and stop signs and whatnot. You know, they're getting into a 4,000 or 5,000 pound vehicle that's going to be hurling along at whatever speed they desire to use that to get away from people. And that puts the occupants of the vehicle, in the guy's case up there in Wisconsin, and anybody else that happens to be unfortunate enough to be on the road, in, you know, extreme danger. So you can't let people leave the scene once you've, you know, in a vehicle, once you've attempted to take them into custody and they're resisting. The thing with the taser and the handgun getting mixed up, that was always a concern of mine. Yeah, I understand the training with the, you know, the gun on the right and the taser on the left, you know, if you're right-handed, that. But
in the heat of the moment, which is what we saw here with the guy that was resisting, obviously, if you believe her, she made a mistake, Gary. And I think a lot of people are going to try to claim that it was on purpose. I'm sure we'll hear that narrative as well. Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Kathy, you're next on 97.1 FM Talk.
Yes. You know, a lot of this, actually most of it, would not happen if people would just comply with the law enforcement officer. Doesn't matter if you're black, doesn't matter if you're white or Asian or Hispanic. The law enforcement officer is doing his job. This gentleman had a warrant out for his arrest. He was just trying to do his job. Unfortunately, the lady grabbed the wrong thing, and that's a bad situation. But if he would have complied in the first place, none of this would have happened.
Well, I tend to agree with that. And the problem is that in very few of these cases do you have cooperation when the gun is fired. I just, this is so different, because if she would have tased him, this would have not been an incident, I'm guessing, unless he somehow dies from the taser. But thanks for the call. Steve, you're next on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Mark. I just pretty much want to, I guess, say the same thing along the same lines. You get pulled over by the police, it doesn't matter what the deal is. You don't like it or whatever, that's fine. Don't like it. Comply. Have your day in court. Make your case there. And you live to tell it. If you don't comply, these things happen. It's unfortunate, but, you know, he's 100% at fault for his death, in my opinion. And this is going without...
I don't know about 100%, just because she pulled the gun and not the taser. We may have to split the responsibility there just a little bit.
That could be a training thing, but she wouldn't have had to pull either of them if he complied.
I absolutely see that point, because on the few rare occasions that I have been pulled over, look, if you get pulled over by the cops, you're not happy. I don't care what the circumstances are. You're not going to be happy. If you get pulled over for speeding, you're going to not be happy. What I've done, and I've done this a couple of times during sobriety checkpoints. Every once in a while, a few years ago, they would have a sobriety checkpoint on 141 near Gravois Bluffs, when I used to live in the Jeffco part. So I don't drink, so I always knew that I was going through that situation safely. But I put my cell phone up, and I wanted to record. And if I were, and I've done this, again, a couple of times, only a few times. The last time I got pulled over, I actually got a ticket because, well, maybe not the last time. I would have been pulled over Only
good
once
grief.
Since.
How many
really,
are there?
It, you know what? In, honest to God, Sue, it's because in 25 years, I think I've only been pulled over three times. But the last one of the times, this is why it's funny. In Jeffco, I was driving my son to get his permit. And the day that that happened, I got pulled over for speeding. And that was a bit of a speed trap. But I don't even know what my point was going to be on that. But bottom line is, if I get pulled over, hands on the steering wheel, you know, I'm not going to jaw with the officer necessarily. And if I do, I'm certainly not going to become threatening or not obey orders. Coming in hot like these officers did with the guy, the military guy in Virginia, I think that's a little different. I mean, they set the tone on that perhaps inappropriately to begin with. Who do I got here? Because I can't read.
You got Tom. Time.
Tom, you're next on 97.1 FM Talk. The computer screen is far distance away from me where my eyes, even with glasses.
Omen, you're in my cabin.
All right, go ahead.
And welcome to that. I also wanted to weigh in on the taser. I'm a retired cop, and I knew when they came out with those pistol-shaped tasers, this was going to be a problem. It has been numerous times around the country. A couple of years ago, we had one in Ladue where the lady officer pulled the taser instead of her pistol, or pistol instead of her taser, shot a shoplifter. There was no death involved, but this has happened before, and I don't think they address it properly in training. That said, I want to say, too, that on the other situation with the Marine, when he's saying, I don't know what's wrong, it's not your job to know what's wrong. It's not time to debate. Do what the officer tells you. Get out of the car. Handle it like a gentleman, and they'll give you the facts. It's not time to debate when the cops are telling you to get out of the car. And that's the problem with a lot of this. People want to try their case in the cabin of the car, and all it does is add to the tension of the scene. There's enough tension going on at the time, and it's a real ripe atmosphere for very bad mistakes to happen, as we've seen in this case.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't say it's her fault entirely. I will say that there was a comment made before that it's manslaughter. I don't believe that satisfies manslaughter. It's an accidental death. It was an accidental incident. It was carelessness, but not carelessness with malice. So I don't think it satisfies that. I will say that she'll probably lose her job, and that's debatable too. But no, I don't see any criminal. I don't see the justice of any criminal prosecution coming her way. And again, welcome to the airwaves, and I appreciate your show.
Well, thank you. And I don't see that either with the prosecution, but someone might try. Somebody might try, and I just hope that things don't get too ugly in Minneapolis tonight. On another crime story, just because I like this story and I'll throw it in here before we get to Frank Cusimano this afternoon. We've had several of these cases in the last couple of years, some of them high profile. There was DNA evidence that was taken from a water bottle used by a guy in a cross-country flight that helped them crack this cold case that was decades long. So Roger Dean was the guy who was murdered in Lone Tree, Colorado, November 21st, 1985. The perpetrator entered the house while his face was covered in a ski mask, forced Dean to tie up his wife, demanded $30,000 in their savings account, got into an altercation with the victim, ended up shooting the victims, run down the street into a car that witnesses say sped away. But they never made an arrest until now. Michael Jefferson is 64 years old.
Oh my God.
He's now suspected in the crime. He's going to be in court this week. They had hair that was left on the ski mask at the crime scene. And, of course, back then, 1985, they didn't have
DNA
evidence. They couldn't figure it out. But in 2003, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation was able to develop a profile. They entered it into a database. No hits. In 2018, they had another lab develop a different analysis. And there was an investigator who was very well versed in DNA genealogy, and they were able to determine the people who were likely the suspect's parents. The family had two sons, and Jefferson was one of them. So they investigate, they try to put pieces together. They realize this guy had a criminal history in Denver at the time. They monitor him, and he's going to get on a flight between L.A. and New Orleans. He drinks from a plastic water bottle. He discards the bottle. The cop that's on the flight intercepts the bottle. They collect the DNA. They placed him under arrest. How about that?
You know I love it.
A lot of those cases like that. Yeah.
I love it.
It is kind of interesting, no doubt about that. All right. Frank Cusimano on this Monday afternoon coming up next, 97.1 FM Talk. How about that Masters, Frank Cusimano? I thought Saturday was a little bit more full of drama and nobody got close to Hideki yesterday, but that was a hell of a tournament, wasn't it?
It really was. But, you know, we all want the final 2 hours, the back nine at Augusta on a Sunday, to be loaded with superstars in the hunt. And with the exception of Jordan Spieth being on the outside, we didn't have it. Because so many times, Mark, those leaderboards, you'll just see the biggest names sometimes in the history of golf. And, boy, there are a bunch of guys that most of America had not really known about before this weekend.
I was pretty happy because I placed three bets. I don't think I've cashed a ticket since last October, and I keep Venmoing money to my friend in Vegas. But I got three players that actually made the cut. So I didn't cash anything, but at least my guys made the cut. I thought that was a step in the right direction. But this was, you know, you have to appreciate this, Frank, as a journalist, as someone who's interviewed professional athletes and other people over the course of your career. Sometimes it's tough when you get someone who's not going to say a whole lot. So the guy, I can't remember who the guy is, the guy who runs the Masters Committee, is in with Jim Nance. They're in Butler Cabin. DJ's there and Hideki's translator. So he asked this question.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You've made history with your wonderful win today. Can you tell us how it feels to be the first golfer from Japan to win the Masters?
I'm really happy.
Very happy. That's all he got. That was it.
So he's a man of few words.
He is a man of few words. There's no doubt about it. But I thought he earned every every stroke on that golf course. He played exceptionally well. Again, I was looking for a little drama yesterday. Will Zalatoris got close. Xander Schauffele threw in a triple bogey on 15 on a par 3, which didn't turn out so well. And I think that cost him about $500,000, that screw up.
Yeah,
on that hole.
And I don't know if you know Xander's background, but his dad was a real hardcore guy. And then when he would come home from tournaments where he'd finished second, third, or fourth with a big trophy, the dad would get the trophy and put it right in the trash can in front of him. Because if you're not first, you're last. I wonder what his dad was like yesterday.
Yeah. No, and he came so close in 2019. He's had a bunch of top five finishes, top tens at majors, just can't seem to close the deal. Speaking of not closing the deal, Frank, I'm maybe burying the headline just a little bit because I'm a golf fan, but how many runs did the Milwaukee Brewers score against the Cardinals Saturday and Sunday combined?
18 total.
Mm.
But here's the stat that's the most troubling of surrounding the Cardinals, is their relief pitchers have thrown 40 innings this season and their starters have thrown 38. That's a bad ratio.
Yeah.
And it's unsustainable. I mean, yesterday you had Ponce going 1 1/3. John Gant is going to go today. And he's, with these two guys, they're just, their next start could be their last start. I really like Ponce de Leon, as a person. And I think he can still be effective. But you just can't do that to a bullpen, go 1 1/3.
Well, and I saw, in fairness to Carlos, I did not see all of Saturday. But what happened Saturday?
He wasn't effective and he got hit. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't terrible. He went 4, but yeah, he didn't have it. Nope.
I just don't know how. And so you kind of have to think that there's some changes. I think Ben Fredrickson's got a column about Oviedo becoming a starting pitcher. You can't let this just continue to go this way this early in the season, can you?
No. In fact, KK is ready. I think he's going to get a start very soon. And then Miles Mikolas actually had a really good bullpen session today at Busch Stadium. So he's going to go back to the alternate camp for the next couple of, maybe 4 or 5 days. But you get those two back in the rotation, and that changes everything.
So wasn't today the trade deadline in the NHL? Was there anything that was going on with the Blues?
Well, I think I told you that if I have as much chance of playing with the Blues this week as Mike Hoffman, and I was wrong.
Whoa!
Because what happened was So here's what happened is Saturday night, after being scratched in 3 of the last 6 games, Craig Berube has to play Hoffman because Robert Thomas is hurt. And what does this career, 25 to 30 goal scorer do? He goes out and he scores 2 goals, and they beat Minnesota in a thrilling game, one of the biggest wins of the season. So trading deadline, all of a sudden they win 2 in a row. They're back in the playoff hunt. And Doug Armstrong's thinking, I can't trade Mike Hoffman now. We got to make the playoffs. And this is one of the guys that actually scores goals. So it's amazing how things changed in a 24-hour time.
Hoffman heard you on Friday. He's like, I'm not having none of that from Cusimano. I'm going to prove him wrong. And he went out and he did it, right?
Yes. If I can take credit for that, I will.
So where does this leave? I mean, because the Blues are hanging in there, right? Now they have a shot.
Yeah, and here's the thing. And I talked to Darren Pang about this today, and he brought up a really good point. He goes, from here on out, almost every game the Blues will play will be a playoff-like atmosphere because they're fighting to make the playoffs. And he says, if you start playing like that, and Binnington has that, you know, that cocky swagger where he says, we're coming, that maybe if you do get in the playoffs, you're going to be ready, and you may, you know, not only make the playoffs, but make a run. I mean, a lot of these guys were on the team when they won a cup. So they're getting healthier. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, you always kind of hold out for that. The problem is I've sort of heard that narrative with the Blues this entire season.
Yeah, but you didn't have Parayko, Tarasenko, Bozak. I mean, that's not just an excuse. That's a legitimate problem when four or five of your best players have not been with you, and now they are.
Frank, I'm going to save the next topic for after the top of the hour. But I got drawn in. This is kind of crazy. I got drawn into watching I believe it was the women's NCAA bowling championship the other night. It was like when you tune into the cornhole championship and you can't turn it off. Sort of similar to that. And I was fascinated. But then there was this. Let's see if you can get a sample of the call here. We're going to have this guy on from Fox Sports.
Right through the face, leaving the 7-10. The 7-10 only been made on television three times in the history of professional bowling on TV.
Come on, kid, do it.
It's the ginger assassin, they call him, too. So that was Rob Stone, who does a lot of stuff on Fox Sports. I loved his call, and I'm so fascinated now all of a sudden by bowling. So that's coming up here after the top of the hour, Frank. I know you're going to be
You actually have
that.
Me interested in bowling. Yeah, I like it.
Well, this whole thing with the women playing the other night, honestly, my wife and I were making fun of each other, but we couldn't turn it off, and we kept watching. Frank Cusimano, we'll talk on Friday. We'll see you.
Okay, Mark, thank you.
455 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com. Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.